south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. How about this question? Dear Johnny, I've driven the Pan-American Highway all the way from California down to Panama. That's about 3,000 miles, give or take. And you'd think, since it's the main corridor from the U.S. all the way down to practically, well, the equator, it would be in decent to good to very nice condition, probably three concrete lanes most of the way. Wrong. We mustn't assume. Although in some parts it is three concrete lanes. Sometimes it narrows down to two asphalt lanes, even one asphalt lane, and sometimes you end up on a dirt road, and for a second you think you've had some missing time or something, till suddenly you're back on a decent road again. And I can tell you this, when I took the road about 4 or 5 months ago now, I quit counting at around 25 different places where there was heavy road construction. In other words, bottlenecks that lasted anywhere from 15 minutes to even 2 hours. But never fear, wherever there's a bottleneck, there are dozens of people walking around knocking on your window trying to sell you stuff like Coca-Cola and cakes and tortillas and chips, you name it. One guy even tried to sell me a beautiful pair of parrots. Yeah, he must have sized me up right away as a clueless gringo in the market for endangered species. But hey, everybody's got to eat, right? So my advice, if you're going to drive that road, have your hotel destinations planned out well in advance. And I know you don't like smartphones much, Johnny, but that GPS really did come in handy. Besides that, allow a lot of extra time for wiggle room and the unforeseen, because there's going to be a lot of that. And Johnny, I totally agree with you about not driving in Latin America at night, even on the most well-traveled road in the region, the Pan-American Highway. Because for one thing, if you've never driven it before, you become overconfident when you're going for miles and miles and miles on a 3 or 4 lane concrete road, especially when you first go over the Mexican border. You think it's going to be like that forever, but it ain't. And as far as obstacles and dangers, curves and stuff, some of it's marked, some of it isn't. And especially at night when you're out in the boonies, do not count on streetlights. Sometimes it's dead black. And all you've got is the moon and the stars and the headlights. Your headlights, because a lot of people on the road don't have lights at all. So you definitely have to keep your eyes open. And one more thing, where there is road construction, they'll have piles of dirt and gravel and holes in the road. Even dangerous ledges and drop-offs that aren't marked. Especially when you're driving those great open spaces on the countryside and you're going pretty fast, you have to watch out for the odd stalled truck or car because they don't like to pull out of a lane when they're broken down. And the only way you know there's an obstacle like that blocking a lane up ahead is that sometimes the guy with the broken vehicle will throw a clump of branches in the road. So when you see that, you know there's trouble ahead, so slow down. And often on older roads that seem to be fine for a long, long time, sometimes you'll notice that one of the lanes is really defective. More than once I've seen plate-sized chunks missing all the way down just one lane for miles. And you'll notice people who seem to know that stretch of road stay out of that lane completely. But us clueless gringos, well, no such luck till we catch on. Now, a word about cops. I was flagged down at one of those famous roadside police stops 3 times while driving in Mexico. Cost me around $275 in bribes in that country. Got pulled over once in Guatemala, no bribe there. Once in El Salvador, no bribe there. Twice in Nicaragua, 1 bribe in Managua. Cost me $20. Pulled over once in Costa Rica, $100 bribe there. Once in Panama, no bribe there. And each time, the offense was the same. They said my car papers were not in order. But of course they were, because I got through the borders easily enough. And that's where you hand your big packet of paper to the transit guys, and they go over it with a fine-tooth comb. But none of that matters if you get pulled over by the cops way out in the countryside. You're kind of at their mercy, and they know it. I forgot to tell you, I drove down alone, which wasn't a great idea. I consider my Spanish to be around 50%, but I played the dumb gringo all the way, since I've heard that's kind of the best way to do it. In fact, it really did seem to speed things up a bit. In other words, the cops got right to the point. They wanted money. And by the way, Johnny, the only places that the cops seem to be real jerks Can you guess? Mexico and Costa Rica. Now, 4 or 5 months ago when I did make that trip, I was a fairly recent listener to your show and had not been back in the archives. But since then, I listened to your show that said you should carry something for the cops in case you get pulled over. Coca-Cola, Cheetos, Doritos, a bag of Chips Ahoy cookies, some assorted bags of junk food. I thought after I heard that show, I could kick myself because I paid a little over $400 in bribes total. I know what you're thinking. That's practically round-trip airfare from LAX to Panama City. But the point was to get the car down. And as far as the traffic in general, seems like when you're approaching a medium to large city, you always get stuck in a bumper-to-bumper traffic jam. What really surprised me is that when you're out in the boonies, all of a sudden you'll hit a medium to small-sized town, and you'll find there's almost never a loop or a bypass around a town like there is in many cities in the States. You almost always end up going right through the center of downtown, through about 6, 8, 10, 12 stoplights sometimes. Which I guess is a pretty good way to see what these small towns are like close up. In fact, I must have passed 35 different little central parks, and you know every town has its central park with its little church and municipal buildings and such. And really, the whole thing surprised me. I mean, I'm on the Pan American Highway. If you look at a detailed map, it seems like a super expressway, but it's not. And there I was a number of times, stuck at a stoplight in front of a central park, weaving around horse-drawn carts, no less, all the while dodging the throngs of people, some of them pushing hot dog stands and tortilla stands on wheels. So if you are driving down, be prepared for things like that. Oh, and be prepared for chicken bus drivers with their pedals to the metal, passing you out in the boonies at 90, even 100 miles an hour. On curves, too, and that goes for truck drivers also. So then the obvious question is, would I recommend driving down? Would I do it again? Well, like you said in some of your earlier shows, it really is hit and miss with the cops and thieves and such in Mexico. Yet I wouldn't hesitate to do it again if I had another male passenger with me. Seems as if you're more of a target if you're a single person driving, because the cops, I guess, figure there'll be no witnesses when they hit you up for a bribe. But I can tell you, once you're out of Mexico, if your car's in good condition and you're not worrying about it breaking down, it's a rather nice trip and you really get to see a lot. In fact, once I got out of Mexico, I felt no danger whatsoever while driving on the road, even when driving through El Salvador, which I understand now has the highest murder rate in the world. Oh, and you should know this. When you're driving through El Salvador, you will go through small towns, as mentioned before. That means pretty nasty-looking neighborhoods. Oh, and be prepared for some of that in Nicaragua, too. Seems as if the Pan American Highway doesn't discriminate. Like you say, Johnny, you get to see the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. And this is interesting. Gringo friends have asked me if there are any places along the way where I would hesitate to get out of the car. I'd have to say no. In the daytime, anyway. Sure, in a couple spots in Mexico and in El Salvador, there were some pretty rough-looking little neighborhoods I was driving through, but still, I didn't see outlaws or gang members with tattoos on their faces or anything truly outrageous. Even when there was a lot of people mulling around, there was some kind of organized chaos to it all. Just like most other places in the world, people were going about their business in peace. Yes, you will see some run-down, scruffy neighborhoods you'll never want to live in. Even so, people were smiling and happy. Oh, and another thing. Of course, I had to pull over for gas on occasion, and it shocked me to see that people will still pump your gas in certain parts of the world. Little guys in their uniforms will come over and check your oil, clean your windshield, just like in the old days back home. And it seems most every little gas station, from the well-known ones like Texaco and Shell to the no-name jobs, will have a little crew of guys that'll wash your car for $2 or $3. And that includes vacuuming the inside and wiping the whole thing down. Since I was so unused to the fact that they pump gas for you, I occasionally gave the guy a 50-cent or a dollar tip. And funny enough, some of the guys resisted like I was playing a joke on them or something. Johnny, I know I've been rambling on, but here's the point of this exercise. All along the way on my little journey from L.A. to Panama City, Panama, oh, and that took me about 7 days. I probably could have done it in 3 or 4 days if I rushed it, but I wanted to take my time. The point is, all along the way, as soon as I'd get to within about 20 or 25 miles of any Latin country border, I'd see little roadside stands where people were selling pirated gas and diesel. They sell them in gallon and 5-gallon plastic jugs so you can see into them. That way, you know you're getting the real thing, I think. Oddly enough, the price of gas varies quite a bit as you're driving through Latin countries. It starts out a little cheaper in Mexico because they're a producer, I guess. And as you drive south, it gets more and more expensive. The worst in Costa Rica and Panama. And everywhere I went, it was at least a little bit more expensive than it is up in the States. However, at these pirated stands, each gallon was marked with a big black magic marker that said the price, which was usually about 50 cents cheaper than the gas down the road at a Chevron or Shell or a no-name station. Yes, that's right. There are dozens and dozens of no-name gasoline stations, names I've never heard of anyway. They were always a bit more run down than a Texaco or a Shell too, which soured me on buying any gas from those places. Even more so because it was 10, 20, even 30 cents cheaper a gallon than at the Shell, for example. I wondered why that would be. Is it crappier gas or more contaminated than the gas at Shell? I also noticed a big chain of gas stations in Central America called PDV. That's PDV gas stations all along the way. I found out later that's the Venezuelan government franchise, and the PDV stands for Petróleo de Venezuela. So, needless to say, I didn't want to buy any of that crap, such as my prejudice against socialist dictators. Nevertheless, when nearing any Latin border, it seems you'll find little stands set up selling pirated gas. And I was always tempted to buy it, 50 cents a gallon less, who wouldn't? But then I was thinking, maybe they mixed it with something. Who knows if they diluted it with whatever? How else could they sell it so cheap unless it's been stolen? And if so, what if it wrecks my engine? Who knows? So, Johnny, what I'd like to know is if you've heard anything about that pirate gas. Is it okay to use? Is it crap? Have you ever tried it? Would we be taking a big chance by buying it? As for me, I had quite a few chances to top my tank off with that stuff, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Even though on a 3,000-mile trip like that, I probably could have saved around $100. Oh, and one more thing, Johnny. I want to confirm something that you talk about on your shows, too. Along the way, I saw so many people just pull over and whip it out. Unlike up in the United States, no embarrassment, no shame involved at all. And I don't mean just the poor and low-class people who ride those chicken buses, either. I saw upscale owners of brand new SUVs pull over and just, well, do it. At first, I made a game out of it. You know, like some kids on long trips pick out out-of-state license plates. So I started counting heads. No pun intended. But I gave up late into my first day in Mexico, after I got up to around 15. Funny how no one walks deep into the brush or tries to find a gas station. They do it right on the side of the road, often not 3 feet from the shoulder, and truck drivers do it right into their own wheel wells. They were all guys too, which makes you wonder, what about the women? But back to the main point, Johnny. What about the gas? Would you put it in your tank? Meanwhile, I'm still trying to catch up on that big backlog of your shows. Signed, Highway Panamericano, Kevin. Well, Kevin, good question. I drive by those little pirate gas station stands all the time. The thing is, when oil was $100 a barrel or so, and gasoline was $3, $4, even $4.50 a gallon down here, there were a lot of cheaper substances that could blend well with gasoline, and you wouldn't know it by looking at it, smelling it, or even giving it a taste. And if you blend it with a cheaper substance that mixes well, you dilute it and make even more money. Good for the seller, bad for your engine. But are they doing that? Now, at gas at $3 or $4 a gallon, there were a lot of other liquids that would blend nicely with gas. Liquids that were much cheaper, so they could sell you something that looked like gas and probably would work in your engine too, though in the long run would probably damage it. For example, there was a time when gas was very expensive, while paint thinner was quite cheap down here. Now, that would blend quite nicely with gasoline and wouldn't separate, but just one whiff and you'd know. Also, I remember when a gallon of soybean oil down here was a lot cheaper than gas. Now, that would mix and leave no telltale odor. You get the idea. So, with these low gas prices now, what could be cheaper than gasoline that would mix well? Ethyl alcohol fits the bill, and it's much cheaper than gas per volume. But when gas is $3, $4, even $5 a gallon, there's a lot of things that will mix with it. Like, for example, a thin grade of vegetable cooking oil. And that stuff's readily available down here. In fact, this is the homeland of that cheap crap palm nut oil. You know, that artery-clogging crap oil that all fast food restaurants use for deep frying. So bottom line, with gas so cheap right now, it's probably a very sure bet you're getting the real thing when you buy from a pirate, because there's just nothing else cheaper they can mix it with. However, when gas prices spike up again, it's a sure bet a lot of pirate gas will be diluted with cut-rate cooking oil, which probably won't harm a diesel engine, but will really screw up your fuel injectors if you're driving a gas vehicle. In fact, on occasion I've been behind a tuk-tuk or two with exhaust fumes that reeked of a Chinese carryout joint. So what does that mean? Surely the gas they were using was cut with palm oil, maybe even recycled palm oil from a fast food joint. There is a market for that, you know. Filtered well and recycled properly, diesels can run on that stuff. But don't try it in a gas engine. A lot of people confuse palm oil with coconut oil, and that's a big mistake. Coconut oil is the stuff that's very, very good for your health, and the unrefined stuff, about 10 times as expensive. And palm oil? That stuff will clog your arteries faster than a mayonnaise IV. However, to many clueless gringos who haven't had boots on the ground, a coconut tree looks a lot like a palm nut tree. Sort of confusing because they're both known as palm trees. As it turns out, the coconut tree has standard coconuts as we know them, big bowling ball-like things that fall and kill over 200 people a year. For more information on that, check with Captain Mango, the world's expert on such things. And the palm nut tree, big and majestic like a coconut palm tree, but its seeds come in bunches like jumbo grapes. So as Captain Mango would say, pick your poison. Instantaneous gravity-aided death by coconut, or a long, slow, drawn-out junk food death by palm nut oil. And yes, a certain amount of that stuff mixed with gasoline will run your car, too. But back to the question, would I buy pirated gas? Well, I'll tell you. If I was really hurting for dough and driving a rental car, could be. Now, here's the thing about pirated gas most people don't think about. In almost all of Central America, the gas comes from Mexico, from that terribly inefficient state monopoly called Pemex. And yes, as with everything government, it's loaded with overpaid, lazy-ass slugs who hate their jobs. So you think it might be about hijacking Mexican tanker trucks? Not really. It's about midnight deals with corrupt government refinery guys and the tanker truck drivers. So every once in a while, an unmarked tanker will get topped off while everyone's looking the other way. In most cases, that's what ends up at these little roadside stands. You did know, of course, that in most countries, the tax on gasoline can be actually more than the price of the gasoline itself at the pump. And sometimes the tax on fuel is simply unbelievable, but we're all in denial about that. So, for example, right now, if you buy gas in Mexico, it's around $3 a gallon. But since the spot price per gallon in a tanker on the ocean is around $1.30 a gallon, that would be the cost of refined gasoline without taxes added. That means when you buy gas legally in Mexico at the pump, you're paying over 100% in taxes. And if you drive a car in Europe, you're really getting screwed. In the EEU, where gas is around $5 a gallon or so, that means EEU governments are stealing 400% in taxes every time someone buys a gallon. Now, Latin Americans know their governments are totally corrupt, so they don't mind buying pirated gas at all. And that goes for pirated CDs and software, in fact, pirated anything. They don't give a rat's ass when politicians say everyone should pay their fair share of taxes. They know there's nothing fair about it, and corrupt politicians just steal it all. In fact, when Latins get one over on the government, there's no embarrassment or shame. In fact, they just might brag about it. Enough said about that. But first, a word about those classy Latin guys who feel they can relieve themselves in public pretty much anywhere. Over the years, I've tried to make a point of startling these guys in the act, and I'll slow down, roll down my window, lay on the horn, yell out an insult, and tell them to get some manners. And you know what I found? Most of the time, the guy fiddling with his thing will realize I'm a gringo, then stare at me in wonder, thinking, I don't believe it. A real live gringo just spoke to me. In fact, I'd be willing to bet that'll be the main topic of discussion at dinner tonight. You can only hope he washes his hands first. But I doubt it. Though I can guess what the conversation will be like. Something like this, I bet. Guess what, Dolores? You won't believe it. A gringo pulled over, rolled down his window, and actually said something to me. Of course, I didn't understand what he was saying, probably asking for directions or something, but still. Do you realize that's the first time in my life a gringo's actually spoken to me? Now, since it's common practice for guys who have the urge to whip it out practically any time and anywhere, it's doubtful a guy in that situation would figure out the real reason why a gringo stopped, rolled his window down, and said something. Enough said about that. Way too much said about that. Okay, shuffling the deck a little bit here. I don't suppose many of you listeners at all know that CNN has its own Latin CNN TV network, in Spanish, of course, concentrating almost exclusively on Latin American news with an emphasis on Latin business. And by the way, I've noticed there are TVs everywhere in Latin America, and I almost never see that channel being viewed. Why? Because Latin Americans are becoming more and more like first world Americans. Most are addicted to reality shows, soap operas, and the nightly perturbations and oscillations of Kardashian's butt. Anyway, the most famous commentator and news reporter on CNN Latin America is a guy named Andres Oppenheimer. By the way, gringos are often surprised when they're deep in Latin America and they run into someone who's got a half Spanish name and a half European name. Like, for example, Andres Oppenheimer. Well, that's because many places in Latin America had a big influx of Europeans. In fact, in the early to mid-20th century, they actually advertised in Europe offering immediate residency and citizenship to Western Europeans in the hopes of populating their so-called banana republics with skilled, educated people. And by the way, you'll notice here in Latin America, a large percentage of the movers and shakers, the wealthiest families and big business and landowners, have last names that are part Spanish mixed with part German, French, English, Italian, whatever. There'll often be a European last name mixed in there somewhere. That said, when the Europeans did come over in those big waves, mostly in the early 20th century, because they were more educated, cultured, and skilled than the locals, they did rise to the top in a hurry. So that's why you'll occasionally run into Latins with European and Spanish combined names. In fact, in the upper classes, it's fairly common, though rare in the middle, lower middle class, poor, and indigenous populations. So anyway, this guy, Andres Oppenheimer, is the star reporter for CNN Latin America. Sure, they put the usual corporate fascist spin on the stories that come out of the first world, just like the parent company does up in the States. However, the Latin stories don't seem to be censored much. Now, you might have heard that in the past few weeks, there's a huge political scandal breaking in Bolivia. I want to paraphrase parts of this article, and you can draw your own conclusions. And this is dated March 2nd, 2016, not even a week ago. It starts by saying, the scandal over Bolivia's populist president, Evo Morales' secret love affair with a young woman, refuses to fade away. He does admit having a child with the woman, and the child, Morales says, has died. But the woman says differently. That's the main part of the story that's making headlines throughout Latin America. But as it turns out, that's the least outrageous part. What's really scandalous about this real-life soap opera is what it's revealing about President Morales' near-absolute powers in Bolivia and the fact that he's awarding almost all government contracts, 99% of them, according to a soon-to-be-published book, to no-bid contracts, which is a recipe for massive corruption. It goes on to say, the scandal broke out last month when a journalist revealed that Morales had a love child with Gabriela Zapata and that Zapata had served for the past 3 years as commercial manager of a large Chinese firm that had received more than $500 million in Morales government contracts to build roads, railroads, and other public works. Turns out the Chinese firm CAMC Engineering were awarded most all of these contracts without open public bidding at all. That, according to Carlos Valverde, the journalist who broke the Morales-Zapata story. At first, Evo Morales did what he always does when accused of wrongdoing. He blamed the U.S. Embassy for carrying out an alleged plot to discredit him, though he conceded they did have a love child named Ernesto Fidel, presumably after Ernesto Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. Though Morales claimed the child is dead and that he had not seen his former lover in 5 years or so. The trouble is, only hours after the president made that statement, a picture popped up on social media showing Morales with Zapata during a carnival celebration less than a year ago. Shortly thereafter, the woman's aunt told the press that the child, Ernesto Fidel, was not dead at all. Meanwhile, after the news about his mistress and the $500 million in contracts going to her firm, she was arrested on February 26th for the crime of illegal enrichment. Now, the most worrying part about the whole story is the fact that insider, no-bid government contracts have become a part of a wider pattern of corruption that has soared under Evo Morales' presidency. As it turns out, one Diego Ayo, a professor at Bolivia's Universidad Mayor de San Andrés and co-author of the forthcoming book entitled Where Has Our Bonanza Gone? He told Lat CNN news interviewers in a telephone interview that public bids for government contracts in Bolivia have virtually disappeared since Morales took office 10 years ago. And he adds, this means almost all the money belonging to the Bolivian people has been transferred to companies handpicked by Morales and the government, creating an environment that does nothing but encourage corruption. In his new book, the writer Ayo and other academics also say that the Morales government has spent $27 billion in public investments since 2005, all of which the bulk has gone to highly visible presidential projects that produce an illusion of prosperity with a small long-term impact. For example, he says, the government has built more than 500 soccer fields with very little spent on strategic projects. In fact, he says, Bolivia invests only 0.3% of its gross domestic product on innovation, research, and development, one of the lowest percentages in all of Latin America. And finally, the article says, the Morales-Zapata scandal is diverting public attention away from the fact that Bolivia's radical populist leader has, much like his colleagues in Venezuela, Ecuador, and Nicaragua, squandered most of his country's recent commodity bonanza in dubious no-bid contract schemes. And finally, it says, Morales' private life is largely his own business, but if 99% of all government contracts are awarded in secret without public bidding, and a number of them go to people like the mother of the president's child, it's everybody's business in Bolivia, and that's the real scandal. Okay, so that's the article. And by the way, for those of you who want to touch up your Spanish or you're just learning Spanish, you might want to tune in to CNN in Espanol if you can get it. And the guy that wrote this article, Andres Oppenheimer, has a program every Sunday at 9 p.m. called Oppenheimer Presenta, which means Oppenheimer Presents. All right, we're getting toward the end now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out the blogs by expert expat John Galt, and you'll see my stuff up there too. While you're at it, don't forget to check out my Expat Files YouTube channel too. Do subscribe. It's free. Oh, and by the way, VWYF. Vote with your feet. South of the border. You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.